You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
You say you want a revolution. 9:13 on a Monday morning, Mike McNamara with you, and Matt Morgan on the backside of one of the best interviews I've ever heard on All Marine Radio rejoins us. So, Matt, first of all, wow. Your thoughts when you listen to it. What an incredible interview.
Yeah, Ben really does a great job of drawing Ned out. You know, one of the interesting things is that a lot of people who knew Ned, you know, he came back from Vietnam. He worked for GM for a little while, and he ended up in the oil fields and then spent the bulk of his career as a track inspector on the railroad. And a lot of people didn't know really much about his history in Vietnam. As a matter of fact, I mean, obviously he didn't get the Navy Cross until 2011. At that point, a lot of people in the community were like, are you kidding me? I never knew that about him. So it was a good way. You can kind of see the way he doesn't leap to tell you these stories, which is, you know, pretty amazing when you consider what he faced, what the Marines in his company faced that night in 1966.
Yeah, well, he talked about killing 900 of the enemy. I mean,
right.
That's a battalion. That's a battalion. KIA. God only knows how many they wounded. But in the whole interview, Matt, you know, now you and I have done this for close to a month, and you've been on this show, and we've talked about not only interviewing, we've talked about different experiences. What strikes you most about the interview?
Well, I think it's consistent in that he's very hesitant to get into a lot of the detail, to go back there. You know, what's funny too is talks about that nightmare, that idea that, they come back to get him, you know, tell him he's got to go back to Vietnam.
Right.
And I hear that all the time from veterans of every era. But, you know, my father, who was an Army combat engineer in Vietnam, that for years was the recurring nightmare that he would have. And it wasn't until he dug up his DD-214 out of a file and put it on his nightstand that he stopped having that dream.
Really?
Because in the dream, he's like telling him, you know, no, I'm out. I did my time. You can't draft me. And he couldn't find that DD-214. So when he had finally found that and had it handy, he was able to move past that dream. So it was interesting. I hear the same thing again and again, or my father-in-law having a dream that, the Viet Cong were attacking the family farm, you know, so
right.
It's interesting that bridge, you know, how short that bridge is. And, I think it's probably similar to what a lot of guys and gals face today.
You know, it was interesting when he talked about, you know, right after he got extended, he got wounded, what, two more times. And, you know, like, go figure. You know it's going to happen. That kind of fatalistic, like, I'm not supposed to be here. This is when I get it. That thought that everybody, I think, has in their mind that when you get extended, like, I'm not supposed to be here, which means something bad's going to happen. We're off script now. And I made it, and now something, you know, just that fatal voice in the back of your head. So that was kind of interesting. Interesting. Well, Matt, let me just tell you, incredibly well done. And kudos to you and for finding Ned and bringing him to us. Thank you very much.
Well, thanks. I always enjoy this opportunity, you know, and it's good to continue to work this network of veterans. So I can't even tell you who we're gonna be talking to next week because I haven't done it yet.
Mm-hmm.
One of the downsides of you know, my worldwide Navy vet who began service in World War II and didn't leave until the late 60s. So, you know, experienced the Cuban Missile Crisis from the deck of a cruiser. But, you know, unfortunately, with the age of these gentlemen, sometimes health issues intercede. And then my fallback is a guy here in town. He's an Army veteran, combat vet from Iraq with severe TBI. And combat disabled veteran, and he and I talk a lot, and I talked to him recently about sitting down with me and talking into a microphone. So, and he's willing to do it. It's just that, that fucking TBI just, it, sometimes he can't sleep. And so he has bad nights. And so yesterday was unfortunately one of those days. So hopefully I'll be able to sit down with Chuck and, that's who we'll talk to next week.
All right. Matt, first of all, welcome home, and glad you enjoyed your vacation. Thank you very much for introducing the rest of us to Ned Seath, you know, Navy Cross recipient, Bronze Star with V recipient, and but most of all, his story, so powerful and so humbling to listen to. What strikes me is just a matter-of-fact way that he talks. You know, he talks like a normal, any normal guy doing what he's supposed to do. And in spite of his extraordinary valor and his extraordinary experience, because not everybody had that experience.
Yeah. I mean, he obviously has that kind of Midwestern sensibility in that regard. What struck me when we heard the story was that that I didn't know the name Ned Seath. You know, and it's like when we're brought up in the Marine Corps, you know the names of these people. Or like we experienced at the basic school where land nav class, we'd read from the book. You know, you learn the names of these individuals. So it's good that now we know more of Ned's story.
Oh, my God. I just saw a story, a Navy destroyer, I think, christened over the weekend. And the story is of a naval aviator on a combat mission in Korea. They're flying Corsairs with his wingman. His wingman's the first African-American aviator in the Navy, carrier aviator, and he gets shot down. And
right.
He crash lands his plane to try to extricate him from the crash. He can't do it, and along with the help of the crew of the medevac aircraft, they got to them before the Chinese did. This is during the Chosin Reservoir battle. He crash lands his plane, for God's sake. And it's,
yeah.
And you hear that, it's just like
wingman out of the cockpit.
Yeah, and he ultimately he can't, but he's awarded the Medal of Honor. Yeah, just crazy, crazy stories that I had never heard. That I was like, are you kidding me? Anyway, all right, Matthew, have a good day. How are things in Michigan?
Thanks.
Good.
Good. I'm getting on a plane headed for Washington. So.
All right. Well, behave yourself.
Be a good day.
All right. So, thanks.
All right. Talk to you soon. Thanks.
Yep. Text message. Is Crossroads always on a Monday? Yes. Always on Monday. Always in the second hour of the program. So we're going to take a quick break. The Gunner joins us next on a Monday. More of All Marine Radio coming up next.
All I can say about MilitaryByOwner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
My name is Juan Perez, Jr. I joined the military in 98. I commissioned as an officer. But I always had in mind the idea that I would go into the special operations community, particularly the special forces. I was accepted to go into selection, and I attended on September 8th of 2001. As I was making my departure of the military, there was that uncertainty. What do I do next? How do I repurpose my skills in a way that's not only meaningful to me, but also that provides for my family and provides an increase in our a way of living, a quality of life. The Global South Foundation has resources when it comes to anything from building resumes to how to relate to a CEO in conversation, how to basically, again, repurpose that which I had learned in a career in special operations, dealing at the strategic and operational level. How do I take that and then turn it towards entrepreneurial spirit into business development? And how do I translate that so somebody can see that value? And in doing so, I landed a magnificent and very rewarding career. I'm the VP of operations for an IT company called BuildSourced. What I say to veterans getting out, be bold when you go to network. Go out to the Global South website, look at what events they have lined up, attend those events, you know, and participate. A lot of the events they hold, they're of key importance in this network. Go out there and engage, just like you would engage in a combat zone, you know, when you're networking there. With folks that don't share necessarily your language, your culture, or your background, and yet we still make it happen. How can we not make it happen here?
The Global Soft Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio.
Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
A mess.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
/9:23 on a Monday. Michael Musselman joins us. Gunnar, listen to this, man. Remember the program I told you about? Hello? You there?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. I told you about a program about a guy on the Smithsonian Channel, a guy who does gun stuff. Remember that guy?
About a what?
About a guy who does gun stuff on the Smithsonian Channel.
Oh, yeah. Former military guy?
Yeah, I think he is. I got to get his bio. He followed me on Twitter the other day. I was like blown away.
He's like a former, like, maybe this is a different guy. Smithsonian Channel? Young,
yeah.
Not the SEAL.
No.
There's a couple guys. You know, like, there's a pilot that follows.
Man, I thought of this. I was like, I wish I could, like, record this and send this to you, but I maybe get you the link to the episode if it's on the internet. Anyway, he built a Stinger.
He what?
You know the Stinger that they made to go ashore on Iwo Jima?
The Stinger.
It was a 30 caliber machine gun that they got out of like dive bombers. And then they converted it with an M1 stock, the carrying handle of a bar, and the bipod legs from something else. And they put that all together, and they built six of them that they took ashore on Iwo Jima. And a guy named Tony Stein won the Medal of Honor with it.
Okay.
And it's crazy.
Yeah.
So they build one, and he goes all over the country, and then he goes to Canada
If I lose you, it's because I'm going in an elevator. I just gotta go four floors down, and then I'll pick you right back up.
Okay. All right. Where?
If I lose you.
Where are you?
I am.
All right. Gunner's in the elevator. Anyway, the Stinger was this man-made contraption. That they took ashore in Iwo Jima. So the story is we lost. He'll call us back. So the story is, this guy, they want to shoot it. And so they go and they kind of do some research to see a diagram of it. So it was a lightweight, because it was in the aircraft, air-cooled, 30 caliber, you know, wing-mounted machine gun. And so so you can imagine them on those islands after the battles, right? So they're looking at different things, and I guess they come... what is Gunner doing? I don't know. He was going down an elevator shaft. He's going down an elevator. And so they yanked it out. Here you come back. All right, can you explain to everybody what you're doing?
Okay, there we go. I got you now.
Yeah. All right. Where are you when what are you doing?
I'm in downtown Fort Worth, coming out of the courthouse.
I knew the courthouse had something to do with it. What are you doing in the courthouse?
Nothing about me. It was for a friend, a character witness on something, family issue. So.
How'd you do?
Well, they never called us, so. We're just sitting around. It was like a threat ploy.
Really?
Yep. So, like I said, I mean, it's, so they're, you know, marital problems, going through a divorce.
All right. So can I tell a story about the Stinger? Because I thought,
yeah,
man, if there was something that Mike would love about this? He would love this. And so they go and they build this thing. They research it, right? They get pictures of it, and they say, okay, these are all the components, and then they find them. Well, it's hard to find people that are going to give up parts of a BAR and do the different things you would have to do. So let alone they had to completely fabricate, the trigger mechanism on a 30 caliber. This 30 caliber, it's a wing mounted, it's a wing mounted, weapon system. So it's got something in there. So now they're going to convert that to a, to be utilized with an M1 Garand stock.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Mike, they would have had to completely fabricate that through their own kind of metalworks, right?
Right. Absolutely.
And so
have a good day.
So they go through this process of making this mechanism that essentially becomes the trigger assembly, and it links the M1A1 stock to the back of this 30 caliber air-cooled machine gun that's going to be fired by one dude called a Stinger. And let me tell you, it looks like a monster.
I think I heard maybe, I can't remember, man, it's been so long, but that does sound familiar. I just don't remember. I heard it from
the all right. So how is your
logging in the car? Don't panic.
You good now?
Yeah, we're good. All right. Woo. No technical difficulties today, boys and girls.
Everything's
like clockwork.
We're fighting through it, though, right? It's no big deal.
See, now I'm downtown, and I don't like being downtown.
I know. We know that.
Ask me why I don't like downtown.
Why don't you like being downtown, Mike?
Because there's too many people.
That's it? That's the only complaint?
Yeah, if downtown was void of people, no cars, no people, man, I'd love coming downtown. But everybody's rushing to get right in front of you to make that left before you do. Get to wherever they're going. They're 30 seconds faster being an asshole.
Yeah. Well, come on. That's what happens when you go downtown.
Yeah, I know. Well, at least I feel good now. I got my gun back.
What'd you do with your gun?
Oh, I got a seat safe underneath that I lock it up.
Oh, yeah. So you had to have it. Yeah. If you're going to the big city, you got to have it.
Yeah, but you can't take it in the courthouse. Go figure.
Why not?
Well, because you can't carry in a courthouse. Stupid rule, but I didn't make it up.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. The, so I saw the Stinger program. I thought of you. I thought, man, then they took it out and they shot it. Yikes, man. Yikes. And then they found some first sergeant or master gunnery sergeant who created a kind of a PT event based on Tony Stein's Medal of Honor thing. I think he goes back to the beats either 6 or 8 times in his Medal of Honor citation on Iwo Jima. So the event is in sand, and on 3 of the occasions, he carries somebody back to the beach with him. And so they do this, like, combination of fireman carry, and then when you go back, I can't remember how many the distance in the Medal of Honor citation it was, but then you carry machine gun ammunition on your return back to go find the Stinger and go kill some more people. I mean,
right.
So it's pretty cool little story, But what was really interesting was the number of collectors that, you know, him talking to collectors about would they donate. And they're like, no, you want something out of my collection? I can't give it to you. But then he tells them what he's trying to make, and they're all, because they're gun guys, they all just like, they're all salivating. They're like, oh, man, yeah, sure, you know, will I get it back? So it was very cool. And I'll tell you what, 30 caliber, and because it was in the wing of an aircraft, the rate of fire was incredible.
Oh, yeah, I bet.
Was
if you hear a gunshot, don't worry. It's me shooting his asshole next to me.
Why?
Because I'm oh, my God, dude.
Mike,
they got this lame coned off, and he gets over in there, and then it stops, and then he wants to get back in front of me. I'm like, no, jackass.
Hey, Mike, it's not a competition. You're going to better places. You volunteer on Wednesday, so it's not a big deal.
Yeah.
It's just people being stupid.
He's going to bring it back out. He's going to bring it out in me.
Only if you let him. Only if you become his victim. Are you going to become his victim? Yeah, I don't think so.
No, no, no. He'll instantly become a victim. I don't care whose victim he becomes. He'll be a victim.
I don't think so. I don't think it needs to happen. That's my point. My point is that you're in a better place. You're doing good things. You're down
I'm trying. Trying very, very hard.
That's Pulp Fiction. I'm trying, Ringo. I'm trying real hard.
Trying real hard.
I'm trying real hard,
I'm
Ringo.
I'm about to cap in your ass. Diddy, something about when I come down here makes me come back to a place I don't want to be.
I think you just, come on, you're like, we're talking, you're on with us, we're talking guns, it's a good thing. I'm not sure.
Yeah,
I'm not
my only lifeline right now. You're my only lifeline.
Well, that's, yikes, that's a little bit nerve-wracking, to be honest with you. The, Mike Musselman driving in Fort Worth that he doesn't really like. Good on you, though, for going downtown and helping somebody out. That's a good thing, yes?
Yeah, sure.
All right.
Sure is.
All right, so tell me, how was your weekend?
Weekend was great, man. Had a blast.
What'd you do?
Guys, twice. Tina went lunch with us one time. Just had a good time. Just hung out, had a good time. We had some really good rain, which we needed. I mean, it was just perfect. Got a lot of things done. Busy with some friends. You know, the same old shit.
Same old shit. Okay. All right. But anything really fun that you did?
This person, I'm telling you, man, come on. Okay, go ahead. What?
Did you do anything fun? I mean, like, really fun?
What's really fun? Like, go to an amusement park? No, I did not go to an amusement park.
Well, no, I mean, it could be anything. I just wondered, you know, if it was...
Yeah, I had lunch, went to church. That was really fun. Got to hang out with some friends.
That was really fun.
Yeah. Dude, I don't like doing a lot of shit anymore. I just like doing casual shit.
Well, no, I'm just saying, fun. I'm not saying, like amusement park fun.
Would I'm not having fun?
No. I'm just saying that it didn't mean like amusement park fun. It meant just fun in general.
Sure.
Okay. All right. You quit being a jackass just because you're downtown. And normally, you know, I'm not even taunting you with it. Hey, what's he doing? Why would you take that?
I know.
Why would
I'm
you?
I'm asking you right now.
Why would you take that stuff from him? What are you?
Yeah, I'm asking right now. Yep.
I know. I'm not even doing that.
Okay, I'm out. I'm out of the city.
All right.
Not really. Technically, I'm on I-30 right now.
Is that not in the city?
That is, well, I'm getting to the outskirts of the city right now. Well, I put it this way. I'm on a fast route out. Yeah, so this is working out. This is like straight out. fast as I can get out of the city, I'm better.
All right. What was the courthouse experience like?
Huh?
What was the courthouse experience like?
Oh, man, it was crazy. I mean, so it's family law courthouse.
Right,
so
right.
Not criminal guys walking around, but a lot of people, a lot of lawyers. It's funny, lawyers you can pick out, not only because of their briefcase, but they just want to look so important. You know, they're just jockeying for the tough guy. They just want to look like that. They want to look like lawyers. They, whatever sells, you know, they live this life and they just chase this dream and this hope. And man, it's just, and I look at them, it's like, oh, I feel so sorry for these guys. Constantly on the go, living that life. You know, who likes a lawyer? Nobody.
Do you think they know that?
Yeah. There's jokes about them all over the place. You've heard about the joke about the lawyer running into the two homeless families eating grass on the side of the road on Thanksgiving, right?
No.
Yeah, he's mortified, truly mortified. He's got his big mansion, big car. He's going home for Thanksgiving. He sees his family, two families, eating grass. Stops out and says, "Why are you eating grass?" "Sir, it's the only thing we have." Says, no. "Pack up everything you got. Put all your families in my car. We're going to my place. You should see the grass there. It's about a foot and a half high." Huh?
That's awful. That's awful. Is that what going
that's
to...
That's a lawyer joke, man.
Is that what going to Fort Worth brings out of you? You've been so, like, wonderful and happy. You happy, happy, happy guy.
No. Now I'm getting happier. I'm out of...
All right.
I'm getting better.
All right. How long's the drive to Granbury?
About 30 minutes. 30 minutes right now?
Okay.
About 40 minutes altogether.
All right. Another story.
I'm going by KRP right now.
Nice. Another story I want to ask you about, if you saw. Did you see the story that the Navy christened a destroyer after a naval aviator who won the Medal of Honor in World War II? And his wingman, who happened to be the first African-American naval aviator in the history of the United States Navy, was shot down at the Chosin Reservoir. He crash landed his plane because his wingman was trapped in his aircraft and couldn't get out. You ever heard that?
Right.
Have you heard that story? Did you see that?
I may have. Again, it sounds familiar, but go ahead.
No, it's just an they could not extricate him, and his wingman died in the aircraft. And then he was, I guess there was a Marine helicopter in the area that came and picked him up. But it's just, I mean, crash land your Corsair in the vicinity of the Chosin Reservoir.
It was a Corsair, like a Panther?
No, it was a Corsair.
Okay.
And
maybe it was flying Panthers, too, yeah.
Yeah. And so that's what the...
Holy shit. I just saw three fat Navy guys go by in a car. I mean, these guys were huge in camis. Oh.
The blue camis?
Yeah, driving around in their blue camis. And I thought I was like, what's wrong with that guy's head? Looks like a damn watermelon. And then looked, and there he is in blue camis. Like, oh. They gave Elvis Presley chops on the side, too. Hell, maybe.
You know what? Why did they come up with those blueberry things to begin with? Why didn't they just wear our uniforms?
Dude, why didn't they just wear... Okay, so if you work on a Navy ship, your uniform should be like a reflector belt. Why would you make a uniform that if you fall over into the blue water, make it the same color as the water?
I don't have a good answer for that one.
Because they don't want to, it's better to not find you then. It's just quicker. Man overboard. Yeah, we're not going to find them. Okay, give me some.
Yeah, I never understood that. I mean.
Or like the Air Force. Why would you make your camis that match the damn tarmac? Your taxi and car jets, for Christ's sakes. Again, sew in reflector like belts or bands or something in there.
Yeah.
Have an air horn going into the shoulder.
Make them functional.
Yeah, leading cause of death in the Air Force is getting sucked into a jet when you get too close. Leading, you know, Air Navy falling off a ship would probably be a big concern. Don't make your uniform the same as this, the sea. Au contraire. You know, shit, make it as that C-Day marker built into it, too. So right when you fall over, a strobe light turns on, C-Day marker starts leaking into the water, and, you know, the life jacket blows up out of the back. That should be the Navy uniform.
Well, you know what? It would. You know what? I've thought about this. Mike and I both served on ship, interestingly enough. And why they wouldn't have some kind of inflatable devices sewn in the pockets, and also something that as soon as it hits salt water, changes color and glows or does something. I don't know. So it's kind of salt water activated flotation device in like in the arm in the arm pockets. And then and maybe in the side pockets, once you go to sea, you wear this uniform, and it also turns some kind of fluorescent color. It never made sense to me why wouldn't they do that? Why wouldn't they?
I don't get it.
But the blueberries is like the stupidest. Have you ever seen a stupider uniform than that?
Yes.
You have?
You know it's service, right? Come on. Once again, the Navy. Wearing a white Dixie cup or a dog bowl on your head with that bib on the back with the blue neckerchief going around.
Come on, that's not stupid. No, that's functional. That's their Cracker Jack uniform.
Yeah, they want to get away from that, though.
Why?
Because they want to go to, like, covers. They want to go to, like, standard piss cutters.
No, come on. I hate that.
I could never wear it.
The history of that service is a proud seagoing history, man.
No, it is. It's
right?
Cool. But if you ask me, for me, it's like, no, I would, nope, not me.
No, not me either. But the whole Cracker Jack, the whole Cracker Jack look, I love that uniform, man. When I was a kid. I thought that was cool.
Yeah.
I thought that was cool.
Oh, I did.
There's such history behind it, you know? Sailors going ashore. Back when they were a badass service, man.
When they were a warfighting service.
Yeah. When they used to mix it up, the Marines would take off those leather belts with those sharpened, that pin that goes through your belt. I don't even know what do you call that thing?
I don't know.
The belt pin device?
Belt pin? The belt pin?
Yeah, the Marines would wrap that around their fist and then put that through their fingers when they balled it up, and they'd fight like that. And the sailors would fight them. That's a worthy service right there.
Yes, it is.
That's a worthy service. All right, what else happened over the weekend? Over the weekend, you know, I really...
Storm.
What's that?
We had some storm.
Oh, how bad?
No, bad at all. Just we had the rain portion of the storm. There were a couple tornadoes, real bad winds, you know, just electrical stuff. But we just had the good part of the storm. We had all the rain, which was great. We need all the rain you can get.
I thought you guys have had a rainy, you had a fairly rainy winter, though, yes?
Oh, yeah, we had a really good rainy winter. Perfect rainy weather. Oh, yeah, perfect.
Okay, baseball season started, you fired up. Give me your Red Sox forecast.
Oh, man, I haven't looked at that whole roster yet, so.
You need to. Yankees, best record in spring training.
Yeah, I'm going to watch the Rangers this year, too. They got some promising going on. They're looking pretty good, too, man.
You're giving up on your Red Sox?
No. Okay, never. I've given up on the Vikings, but not the Red Sox.
Why?
You know what the difference is?
What?
The Red Sox are world champions.
Yeah. They're
proving to their fans that they mean something.
By winning.
Not like my Vikings, who think that mid-season, hey, you know what? Let's have a get-together and have all the wide receivers on my place, and we'll just call our own plays.
How about that?
That's like a good idea.
It's crazy.
That sounds like a good idea. Let's go listen to any of the coaches. What do they know? We got this one in the bag. Yeah. Yep. That's my team.
Or, right.
Hey, you know what? Let's go draft a free agent broken quarterback who next hit, he's out for the whole rest of the year. There's my team.
All right.
Adrian Peterson might come to the Cowboys, huh?
No, he's going to see the New England Patriots.
I don't know, man.
That's where he is today. Well, he's from Oklahoma, so that would be close to home. But who wants to move back home, honestly? Bill in Ohio.
I'm home.
No, you're not. Bill in Ohio just
Well, not yet. I will be in a little bit, but I'm home.
Bill in Ohio sent me the link to the book about this thing. The book is called Devotion, an epic story of heroism, friendship, and sacrifice. Devotion tells the inspirational story of the U.S. Navy's most famous aviator duo, Lieutenant Tom Huebner and Ensign Jesse Brown, and the Marines they fought to defend. A white New Englander from the country club scene, Tom passed up Harvard to fly for his country. An African-American sharecropper's son from Mississippi, Jesse, became the Navy's first black carrier pilot, defending a nation that wouldn't even serve him in a bar. Let's see. Devotion takes a soaring overhead with Tom and Jesse and into the foxholes with Red and the Marines as they battle a North Korean invasion. It's actually a Chinese invasion. As the fury of the fighting escalates and the Marines are cornered, the Marines weren't cornered, they were surrounded at the chosen reservoir. Tom and Jesse fly guns blazing to try to save them. When one of the duo is shot down behind enemy lines and pinned in his burning plane, the other faces an unthinkable choice, watch his friend die or attempt history's most audacious one-man rescue mission. And then, so, the story. The book is called Devotion. The writer is, his name is Adam Makos, M-A-K-O-S. I should try.
Now you say it like that, I have heard about it. Yeah, I remember that book.
I'd never heard about it in my life. I mean, crash landing your airplane. I've never heard. The most I've ever heard is staying on station, right, until you're almost out of fuel to provide support.
Yeah, you're on cover form.
Right, so hoping that somebody else can get there.
There's another book similar to that. I have that book. It's called A Higher Calling. Have you heard of that?
No. Oh, is that a synopsis of a lot of Medal of Honor?
No. Really neat. True story. It's about a B-17 pilot, World War II in Europe. And I don't know what mission he was on, but, you know, it doesn't really matter. But anyway, he was so chewed up, his bomber, that they left formation. You know what happens to bombers when they leave formation. So
yeah.
The chewed up ones, right?
Right. It's like the weak link leaving the pack. It gets...
Yeah, the Germans just chew them up. Well, Messerschmitt 109 pulls up. They see this dot, and they talk about it. This dot in the sky comes closer and closer, and it's a Messerschmitt 109.
Right.
And it comes right up on their six. And they're waiting, and they're just bracing for the next hail of gunfire. It doesn't happen. He goes out, the Messerschmitt goes out, flies on the wingtip, and you can see, they go through this whole thing, you can see the German pilot eyeing the ship. And then he goes back into the 6 o'clock position. And again, they're going through and they're kind of asking what's on their mind. He pulls one more time out in front, wags his wings, and escorts them all the way back to the English Channel, wags his wings, salutes them, and then takes off. This bomber pilot, it drives them insane.
Why?
Why? Why? Why? Why? They go through their whole life. Finally, when they're in their 80s, they're reunited together.
Oh, really?
And it is, yeah, dude. I'm telling you, it's called A Higher Calling. You can actually watch the interview on YouTube, the actual live interview when they first met. it is emotional like there is no fucking tomorrow. And it goes back and forth of why, and the German pilot, who's an ace, he's a big-time ace. He just said, you know, at that point, he realized he had enough.
Guess who wrote the book?
Who?
Adam Makos, the same guy who writes the other book.
There you go. That's why I own both books.
We gotta get him on.
Dude, you gotta read the book. Higher Calling. You gotta watch that video though. That is tough.
We'll play it.
Yeah, play just this short person when they ask him the question why. He's got like an English accent, and he's got that German in the background. He's just a hilarious old man. But
okay,
they're talking.
All right, hold on. Do you want to listen to it? It's 6 minutes.
Yeah, go.
All right. So this is Mike. Mike, just set this up one more time. It's a B-17 crew?
The B-17 crew. This is the pilot of the B-17 bomber. They just came back from a bombing over Germany. They got chewed up real bad. A couple engines out. Ailerons, elevators chewed up. They're losing altitude. And up comes a BF-109, Messerschmitt German ace, up on their six to finish him off. And he doesn't. And he pulls the blown wing, escorts them across occupied France, out over the English Channel, waves, salutes them, and turns around and heads back to Germany. And if he had been seen doing that, he'd have been shot once he landed, you know? But he had sacrificed for that crew. A complete stranger, an enemy. But he asked why when they actually meet, and it's amazing. So go ahead.
All right. Here you have it. The pilot's name is Lieutenant Charlie Brown. This crew is on its first mission. I'm reading you the little placards that are coming up before the audio starts.
Okay.
This guy's name is Franz Stigler. He's a German fighter pilot. His job was to destroy the B-17. And they reunited in 1990, and that's when this was taken.
I saw this B-17 about a mile and a half away coming out fairly low. And I said, Professor, what's going on now? It looked like it was landed and unloaded some casualties or whatever. Anyway, I told him he kind of stopped my motor, and they went after this B-17. And it came up from the rear. It was in about, as I came up to him, he was almost about 2,000 feet high again. And I saw the tail gunner wasn't there because the guns were hanging down. Half the tail was missing on the left-hand side, practically no tail at all. So, and the rudder was in the same shape. So I went up to the right side, along the fuselage. It's hard to describe if you see an airplane like that, so crippled. You know positively that there were badly wounded people on board. And for me, it would have been the same as shooting at a parachute. I just couldn't shoot. That's all there is. I just hoped that he brought his wounded man home. I went up to the right wing, right to close by, and I saw one pilot sitting in there. And after that, another one came, the co-pilot, and they looked at me, and the pilot was looking.
I looked out the right window. And there parked on my right wing is a German BF-109. The little sucker looked like he owned me and belonged there. And I was still in a little bit of a state of shock. And so I sort of closed my eyes and shook my head as you would with a nightmare. And if I close my eyes and open them again, he'll be gone. Well, I opened them again and he was still there.
I waved to him, and we went, came out over the water, and I think the shortest way they can get away was to fly to Sweden. Well, it was on a half an hour flight for him. But no, I said, stupid guy, he made a left-hand turn towards England. I said, well, now I hope you make it.
The pilot gave a salute and left. So we started trying to make a decision. I said, anyone who wanted to bail out could bail out. I was going to try to make it back to England. And so the crew all chose to stay on board, and we just barely made it in England, about 250 feet. A couple of P-47s came along, got us into another air base. We landed. Casualties were removed, and then we started a normal interrogation, that sort of thing.
So it said that the pilot, Charlie Browns, in about 1980-something, started looking for this German pilot and found out he was living in Canada. So we got about two more minutes.
Yeah.
Meet personally. That's what we did here in this hotel here. That's where I was sitting in the basement trying to get drunk.
Could you sort of tell us what your feelings were when you two met today?
It's almost impossible to describe. We had spent several hours on the phone, so I felt that we had something in common. First, a love of air and a love of aviation. It was like meeting a family member, a brother that you haven't seen for 40 years. That's about as close as I can come.
Franz, what were your feelings when you met again for the first time?
I was so happy as we met that I dropped him on top of him. It wasn't easy.
Well, you know, if Joe... The fact that he risked his life, really, in many ways, and I wrote him in a letter, I said, if you made a habit of feeling sorry for Bomber Cruz and flying up alongside them, I am sure that you were shot down many times. But it was not only the, if you will, I use the term audacity, that he came up to us and... then recognizing the threat. If someone had seen him and reported him, it could have been a death sentence, a double. So he had the double impact of the fact that we might do something stupid, or his own government, as a consequence, might do something, not necessarily stupid, but in terms of punishment.
You know, it's truly a crazy story that, the German fighter pilot, Franz Stigler, would survive the war and somehow or other, they would somehow or other, meet again. It's what a crazy story.
Yeah, you know, in that case, you know, when you read the whole book, it's an amazing story because, like you said, the B-17 crew could have just, you know, said, gee, you know, what the hell, and just opened fire on this guy.
Right.
Or he could have been seen, or, you know, the 109 guy would have said, you know what, this is another bomber crew, I'm doing my job.
Right.
You know, just an amazing connection that took place between two aviators in World War II, the chivalry that transpired during that day. You know, and hopefully, you know, like I said, you know, what makes the difference is people... If people, one person reads that book and it changes their life and the way they think about things, or the way they treat other strangers. And that's kind of the way the book is kind of read, where I took it anyway, was, you know, no matter who you're by or you're doing, you know, you can make a difference in someone's life if you just kind of show a little bit of gratitude or something, or kindness during your day. And that's what kind of the book kind of goes by. And, you know, it's an amazing book. That's why when you're telling me a story, I say, wait a second, I have that book. And then I was like, oh, but you're right, it's written by the same dude. And I think he's got another book, too. But it'd be cool to get him on there and ask him why. You know, what compelled him? How did he find this story? You know?
You know what? That would be interesting. And I think that he's a young guy. He's a journalist, historian, and editor of the military magazine Valor. In his 15 years of work in the military field, he's interviewed countless veterans from World War II, Korea, Vietnam, and present-day wars. He's flown a B-17 bomber and a T-38 with the Air Force, and was one of the few journalists privileged to examine Air Force One with its pilots. In pursuit of a story, Makos met presidents, had tea with Prince Charles, toured the DMZ in Korea with American troops. A high point of his work occurred in 2008 when he traveled to Iraq to accompany the 101st Airborne and Army Special Forces in their hunt for Al-Qaeda terrorists. He's written A Higher Call, which we just talked about. He's also written Voices of Pacific, The Untold Story of Marines in World War II. So he's written a whole series of books. So we're going to have to get him
right.
on. We're going to have to get him on. Interesting guy.
Yeah. No, you got to read the book, Mac. Both of them, actually.
All right, man. Great. We're done for the day. Are you almost home?
Brother, I'm back in the country again. I just saw a dead armadillo, so I know I'm home.
A dead armadillo. All right, man. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
All right, buddy. I'll talk to you later.
All right. There you have it. That is the Gunner here on a Monday edition of All Marine Radio, right here on the All Warrior Radio Network. So, my thanks in order of appearance, Justin Constantine. And after that, Crossroads with Matt Morgan, and it's part two of the Ned Seath interview. And I'll tell you what, this program's going to repeat itself. I would tell you, worth listening to. Worth listening to. So don't touch that dial, whatever you do. Just hang in here. We'll take a short commercial break. And then, listen, Justin Constantine has really interesting things to say about post-traumatic growth, if you're just tuned in here a little bit ago. And then, and also, the Ned Seath interview, if you didn't hear that, incredible. Absolutely incredible what his company, Kilo Company 3-4, went through in Vietnam. So whatever you do, don't touch that dial. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends about All Marine Radio. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and subscribe, and that helps us out. We have new sponsors looking into us all the time, and pretty exciting time for us. So having said all of that, have a great afternoon on a Monday. All Marine Radio. Out.